Hey everyone, Clay here. Just wanted to let you know I've got a new comic book out right now from Comixology Originals and Amazon. It's called Hard Style Juice. It's a professional wrestling murder mystery, so if you're into pro wrestling and comics and all that good stuff, you're going to want to check it out. And it's free to read if you have Amazon Prime. It's a digital-only comic. If you want to check it out, head over to hardstylejuice.com, and that'll direct you right to the page where you can check it out. That's hardstylejuice.com. Thanks, guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to your latest episode of Star Trek Picard Season 3. So, Clay, $1 million to you. If you can explain to me, without looking it up, maybe you did look it up, the backstory of Thaddeus, backstory of Thaddeus Troy Riker.
I can guarantee you I did not.
I just did, and I would have failed this test miserably. Can you explain, do you remember the backstory for Thad Troy Riker?
Wes, you are really giving me the benefit of the doubt here that I even remembered that this was something that was a pre-existing fact of canon. Which I did not.
If you remember,
I didn't put it together that this was a dead son. I actually thought maybe that it was the daughter that we saw, and maybe that his his child was trans.
Yeah, that's just gender bending.
I don't know. It's the future. It's more. It's totally acceptable. I assume.
Michael Burnham.
Yeah,
Michael Burnham, all that stuff.
I was like, oh, that's pretty progressive. I didn't. I was surprised to learn that it was a dead kid.
A dead male biological child was Thaddeus Troy Riker. Once I read this, it all came back to me. But the whole thrust of season one with Nepenthe was that they went to that planet because he had that disease that was killing him, and they thought Nepenthe could heal him. And the thing was that a synthetic brain could have like saved his life, but synths were illegal in the Federation at that point.
Oh, that sounds vaguely familiar. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
This season one of Picard.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Remember when he goes to see Riker and Troy on that planet? It's in like the one semi-decent episode from that season.
Okay.
And they're there with the daughter, and that's where the son had died. And the reason he died is because it all ties back to the synth stuff in that season.
Gotcha. Yes. No, I... Nope. $1 million.
All you need to know is he's dead. Yeah. That's all. That's the important part of this character.
$1 million could not have told you that.
Troy Riker. Let's get into 17 Seconds, which is the latest episode of Star Trek Picard. It's the third episode of the third season of Star Trek Picard. It came out on the 2nd of March, 2023. Written by Gene Meggs and Cindy Appel. Directed by Jonathan Two Takes Frakes. In-universe date 2381, when everyone is smooth and wrinkle-free. And then 2401, when everyone's wrinkled and old as fuck. In this episode, 17 Seconds, Picard grapples with an explosive, life-altering revelation while the Titan and her crew try to outmaneuver a relentless Vadic in a lethal game of nautical cat and mouse. Meanwhile, Raffi and Worf uncover a nefarious plot from a vengeful enemy Starfleet has long since forgotten.
Yes.
These blurbs. There's a lot of really, adjectives in these.
Really
blurbs.
Trying to pull in the normies there. Just sell every ticket they can with those blurbs.
We are underperforming in the sailor demographic. Let's get nautical in that blurb, please. And also bring some prostitutes into the show.
Mm.
So 17 Seconds. It's the first episode that has a title that is not some kind of pun on Next Generation terminology. So I don't know. I don't know where we really want to start this one, but I was trying to push myself to not just always complain about plot type stuff.
Yeah.
And I was kind of glad with this episode that it came up because I think the character stuff in this one is probably worth talking about. I didn't want to say interesting because I think the character stuff kind of highlights to me why this show is better than the previous two seasons of itself, and also why it's exactly the same as the previous seasons.
Yeah.
So I thought that there were a couple scenes in this one where I almost felt like the TNG characters were actually on the TV at a point.
Yeah.
I feel vindicated in that Michael, you cannot take Worf out of Michael Dorn. Like you just can't. No matter what the show will try, Dorn will do Worf correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he did. There's one sequence where when Riker the first time that Riker, well, the very first time that Riker takes command of the Titan and he and Picard have a conversation with each other, that felt straight out of Next Generation in some ways. Mm-hmm. And I was very pleased with that. And then there are other things that it's just, it feels like it's the modern sensibility of the show or like the way that this franchise goes. Like the Beverly and Picard scene where they're talking to each other, I thought was bad. Mm. And then whatever's going on between Riker and Picard, I thought was terrible mm-hmm. and just poorly executed. So I was kind of all over the place. You know, on one hand, Michael Dorn is semi-saving the Raffi scenes because even though she continues to be terrible, it's funny to see Worf in that situation. And there's some stuff on the Titan that's pretty good. But at the same time, I feel like all the problems of what the show does and has been doing for a long time, which is like, we'll get into it, but it's all still there. And it's all just kind of humble jumbly all together at this point in episode 3.
Yeah, I thought the beginning was good, the middle was bad, and the ending was great.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is, the beginning, I know it started off, it had the Picard and Beverly sequence and stuff, which I don't know if the content was, the actual dialogue was anything to write home about, but at least they were having a conversation about something that had character weight to it, you know,
mm-hmm.
that was underpinning all the decisions that Picard was making for the rest of the episode and stuff.
Yeah.
The middle section I didn't like because that's when you get into the stuff where like the doctor on the Titan doesn't understand what internal bleeding is.
Like concussive internal bleeding.
Yeah, like I mean I know you got to get Beverly in there doing her thing, but it made that doctor look like a total chump.
Well, someone on the Discord brought up a good point. Like, why do those two need to be combative with each other? Why do the doctors right. have yeah. to be antagonistic?
Why can't they just work together? Yeah. There's no reason. And the end I thought was great because like it legitimately it
what is the end? Sorry.
The final sequence when they end up going after the Shrike and they use the portal gun to hit them with their own torpedoes and then they start spiraling out into the, like it was an action sequence that actually really engaged me because I wasn't totally sure how it was going to play out. And I thought where they left it was a nice cliffhanger and it felt like they were doing stuff that was actively engaging in a way that this show never has not done to this point. Like
not on a character level though, just on like a
yes,
action
on,
sequence of the
just
ship
on
being
like
in
you know a sequence at the end of the. I will say that like I don't know what the fuck is going on with Riker and Picard because, like the idea that
it's the focal point of the episode.
I know, but I don't know why Picard, of all people in all of Star Trek, is like, what if we just shot them a billion times until in the back until they died? It's, you know, it's like, that's not Picard.
And he's even worse than that. He's like, let's find their children and murder them as well, just to be sure. Yeah.
Like, you know, like I guess I get that the idea is that he's overreacting to protect Jack, I guess. But I can't imagine that he would go so far out of character. Like, there's this weird thing that is continuing through this show, specifically this season, and maybe the last two seasons. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's like Thad Riker, who knows?
Where they are, like, trying to retcon Picard into, like, this action man. Where, in that sequence at the beginning, Beverly's like, every time I thought about telling you had a son, you were sword fighting some guy on a cliff or someone was throwing grenades at you from a moving car or you were like swinging over a chasm and to stop the Romulans from crashing into the Goodyear blimp or some shit over the Super Bowl. It's like this is not – that's not who Picard is and it never has mm-hmm. been. It was him exactly once in First Contact –
when he was in the best shape of his
life. Right, when it was like motivated by character a bit.
Yeah.
But he's the most pop culturally defining element of Jean-Luc Picard is that he drinks tea.
Yeah.
He's not like he's not the guy who shows up and just starts like blasting people. And
not even iced tea. It's not that cool. He just drinks hot tea.
Yeah. And it's Earl Grey, which is like not a great tea.
We don't want it to be too flavorful.
Yeah. I have other questions. Like, do you put sugar in chamomile tea?
Did Worf do that?
Worf asked Raffi if she wanted sugar in her tea, and it was chamomile.
Why didn't he need sugar in chamomile?
I don't know. Oh. I mean, he's really
gone pussy. Yeah, he's completely lost it.
But like, I don't understand this weird retconning of Picard into this action guy, because that final sequence, it kind of felt like they got it backwards. Like Riker should have been. It's tough because I understand what they're doing, right? Like Riker is the one in command.
It's an inversion,
yeah,
of their roles.
But it doesn't feel particularly true to their characters for them. For Picard specifically, like Riker, I can definitely see Riker getting fed up with Picard the way that he does.
Yep.
I don't know if he necessarily at the end would accuse him of killing the entire ship, but. But up until that line, I can totally buy his frustration with Picard. The way anybody gets frustrated with, like, when you're trying to do your job and your dad's giving you notes, you know?
Yep.
But it's just like, it's so weird to put those two at odds in that specific way.
Yep.
Specifically because of Picard. Because that's not a course of action that I believe Picard would advocate for.
My issue with it is something that ties back to the previous two episodes, or at least I feel it's like emotionally true, if not literally true. I'd mentioned in the previous episode, I'd said that like Picard will say something and I'll be sitting there as a viewer going like, I disagree with what he's saying, but the show will think that he is actually correct and proceed as if Picard is correct from that point on. You would ask me for an example and I didn't really have one. The Picard and Riker interactions in this episode are almost exactly what I'm talking about, which is that I'm watching it and I understand Riker's point of view and I understand what Riker is doing. Picard comes in with an attitude that I cannot understand why he is talking this way.
Yes.
I don't know what his motivation is for talking this way. I don't know why he's doing it. And I don't know if the show wants me to be on his side or to realize that he's being an asshole in this situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So I sit there and I'm confused about it. And then apparently at the end of it, it's all revealed that, I guess he was being an asshole. But the show and I understand that he's supposed to be doing it because he has that final line to Riker where he's like, you have to stop being such a pussy about losing people like your son and stuff like that. And Riker's like, you son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they're saying Picard is kind of playing up that angle, but that's never textual before that point. Like there's never a point where you're clued into what Picard is thinking as to why he's going to act this way.
Yeah.
So I feel completely detached from, my head is spinning as to like, who's right here? Like, not that I need to know who's right, but I don't even understand the argument between the two of them because I don't understand where the difference of opinion is coming in.
So I think that this point of view for Picard is not impossible to use. I just don't think they're using it at the right time, because the thing that they are getting at with the scene with Beverly is that there's always something coming for Picard. There's always something that's going to draw him back out into space. Always something that's coming trying to kill him or whatever. Right. This point of view makes sense if you know what the thing is that's coming for him. Because if whatever's coming for him is something that has been part of his life for as long as he's been in Starfleet or longer or whatever, and something that just keeps dogging him, I can see Picard getting to the point where he's like, I have to put a stop to this because, you know, everything that Beverly said was right. They're not going to stop coming after me. I need to put an end to this right now. And Riker can be like, well, I mean, maybe this isn't the time. I understand, but maybe this isn't the right time to do it.
Right.
He's like, no, it has to, the line must be drawn here.
Yeah. Again,
once more. but like, I don't think we have that connection yet to the antagonist, where this point of view makes sense. Because, like, we're kind of getting into this gray area with this where we still...
Well, sorry, just to interrupt there, like, that's another point of that, because as this episode takes off where the Shrike is chasing the ship into the nebula, mm-hmm. there's a scene where Picard is talking to Riker and he's like, she's toying with us. She's not going to try to attack us right away. She's going to chip away at us. It's like nothing has happened, so why the fuck does he know this? Like,
well,
why?
She did literally say that last episode, I think, because that was the whole explanation of the name of the ship being the Shrike, because it was a bird that picks away at its prey.
The things.
Because that's the answer we were looking for before. It's like, well, she has all these bombs. Why doesn't she just blow them up? But she does specifically say that she's just basically going to peck them until
she's going to toy with them. Fair enough. So I'm wrong about that. I guess that the point to feed into it, that be like, Vadic, as you're saying, has no connection to him. He says in the episode, he's like, I don't know who this person is. So,
yeah, and like, and you don't get it. So it's strange because plot-wise, there's a couple things going on here, one of which I was psyched about, some of which I'm not psyched about. Mm. Obviously, leading into the great ending, I think, is the reveal of the changelings, which I fucking loved. Because at least it wasn't the goddamn Romulans or the Klingons. It was something. It was a bit of a deeper cut. And to have Worf be the one there who's like giving you all the shit about the changelings, I'm like, okay, all right, I'm into this.
Yeah.
But that being said, Picard has no connection to the changelings. And so the only thing we have right now to go on is Vedic. And Vedic, the literally only thing she says in the episode is, again, and they keep shooting the ship. Like there's been no movement on her, so we don't know what her connection is to Picard. I think someone literally asked Jack, hey, Jack, what the fuck? And he just kind of like gives a smirk and leaves. So they're not giving you anything to like make these character choices really work in the middle of this. And even as much as I enjoyed the changeling thing, it's still very overly disparate. Like it's not. And I mean, that's kind of...
You're just having trouble seeing the connections as to why the changelings would be involved.
Yeah, and like, I mean, they're going after a weapon. Okay, sure. I guess these are the questions that you are going to have through the season that we're going to get resolved. Jesus. You want to talk about how this show is better and also the same? It was going along, okay, this is pretty good. They're doing some character stuff, interesting stuff. All right, you know, Riker's flying the ship. Oh, call me number one. That's fun. And then they cut to after what's his name gets gassed. What do we get?
Oh, Jack.
What do we get? Everyone, what do we get? This is Star Trek Picard. It wouldn't be Star Trek Picard without an obtuse vision of some of a door being shut with some sort of cryptic thing that now we got to figure out what the fuck this is. And it's like, I almost shut the show off when they did that.
Yeah. They can't resist. It's a modern, or at least it's, I don't know if the Sopranos is to blame for this, but at least the Sopranos did their dream sequences somewhat interestingly.
It's like everybody who works in the show is like, hey, did you guys watch Hannibal? That was pretty good. We should do that.
That's good. Let's do it.
I mean, maybe that's Brian Fuller's whole plan.
Do Hannibal in space. Yeah, I don't know where to start because I have things to say about the changelings. I have things to say about...
I just wanted to say what my favorite bit of dialogue was when he was talking to Beverly and he's like, why did you say trust no one? And like her response, I almost the way that she looks at him, I almost thought she was gonna say, it's just a thing people say.
It's just a saying. It's just one of those things. So I guess a good place to start is because it ties into a lot of the character beats, is that I have a real issue with not just this show, but any of these sort of like franchise universe things. Eventually, it becomes inevitable that the first characters that you met become seen as legends within the universe of the thing itself.
Sure.
And like everyone is like, oh my God, you knew Han Solo? Oh my God, you knew Geordi LaForge? Like, so there's a lot of sequences in this where characters will just toot the horn of another character for mm-hmm. some reason. They'll go like, Geordi LaForge was the greatest engineer of all time, and he told me to do this. And it's like, fuck you. Like, Geordi LaForge was just some schmuck in TNG. But like Worf, they do it for Worf.
I wish Seven had been like, listen, baby, I served with B'Elanna Torres, okay? I know what a real engineer looks like.
Much like B'Elanna, I can see what a real engineer looks like. Raffi has one where she refers to Worf as a legend.
Mm-hmm.
The entire, so this ties into the Beverly thing too with what she decided to do. I was totally fine with Beverly's, one of Beverly's reasons for what she did, which was to get impregnated, not tell him about it, and then raise the child in secret, was that she's like, I've had a lot of family members die because of space.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's true. Like there is, like Crusher has, for a character who's never really talked about it, she's had a lot of death in her lifetime, right, or things taken away from her. So I was like, that makes sense.
There's that one episode where it turns her on.
Yeah, that's the other part that I hated was your action scene sequence where she's like, you're such a legend that everyone's gunning for you all the time.
Right,
it's like, God damn it. Like, why can't she just take the kid for that more realistic, believable reason that she doesn't want to lose anybody else? Don't tie it into Picard is swinging from jungle vines with a knife in his teeth.
Right.
And like the Klingons are trying to shank him at the same time. It's just so... It's so, and the problem is that those two are so fucking old. I can't take any of that seriously. I can't take the action stuff seriously. I can't take the pregnancy stuff seriously.
Right.
I can't take Picard being shaken as a father as he's 95 years old at this point, and like things are affecting him this way. It's just, it's not the story for these aged people. It just seems really weird to have this happening to them at this time.
It does kind of feel like a story that is like 20 years too late or something.
At least 20 years too late. She got pregnant at like 65.
Yeah.
Like, you know? Right. What's going on?
Yeah. At least 50. Like, if we're being generous, at least 50. Yeah, like, that's the thing, right? I feel like her reasoning is completely sound with pointing out to Jean-Luc that something always pulls him back to space. And he's always going out there, and that's always going to be his first priority. Like, that's enough. You don't need him to be Wild Bill Hickok at the same time. You know what I mean? And I think Picard's response is actually pretty good. Like, it's the anger that he feels about like not getting the ability to make that choice for himself is actually a pretty good response to that conversation. But I do think it just gets undercut by this. Like, I think it adds to what you're talking about when she's like, you're constantly doing these crazy action things, and then the reverse shot is like the mummified corpse of Jean-Luc Picard. You know,
he's got to lean against the wall. We've been standing for so long, Beverly.
I picture these action sequences being like in Texas Chainsaw Massacre when they're trying to get Grandpa to kill her with the hammer. You know, it doesn't quite work the same as if you had done the same thing with like 55-year-old William Shatner, where you're like, oh yeah, he still gets some zip. He can still get it done. So yeah, it's weird. It's a strange choice.
Beverly, I think it's hard because in the same way that I don't know the Picard and Riker thing, like I don't know what the show is not giving me enough information for me to make informed decisions about what characters do, which I think is a real problem. And from all the information I've gathered, not to go all like men's rights activists, but like Beverly did a horrible thing here that I don't really understand. She has no justification for anything that she's done beyond her like her own selfishness in that way. And then she does that other shitty thing where she's like, well, I said he could go say hi to you and he chose not to. It's like, okay, not necessary to bring that up. I just think that their conflict could probably have been better drawn here to avoid all the sort of action shenanigans, give her a better reason for the secrecy beyond the fact that we haven't seen her on TV in 20 years and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel right. And I don't think that the show gives you enough information to build a case for or against her. Like, it's not like they're not doing like a Skyler White. Was her name Skyler? Who was, right?
From Breaking Bad. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not, you know, it's not a case of stupid people who watched that show thought that she was just being a nag and like bringing Walter down. You know, like if you're a semi-intelligent, you watch that and you realize like that, like all of the pressure that she's under and like all the things that she has to defend mm-hmm. in order to like defend the family and stuff from this guy. This is not that case. Like, we haven't seen enough of Crusher and we don't know anything about her. So her decisions just don't land to me in a way that I feel are sympathetic and could actually build a narrative around. It just feels like it's like, this is the plot thing that happened. I'm going to say it to you. I did a lot of things wrong to get us to this point, and you're somewhat justified in being angry at me, but let's just continue down this plot path. Yeah. It doesn't feel... I just got the sense in that scene that those two characters talking to each other... it was what I was afraid of last episode when I was like, when they're going to talk about this, it's going to feel weird. And Beverly and Picard talking to each other in that scene did not feel like Beverly and Picard talking to each other to me.
Yeah.
It felt like McFadden and Stewart talking to each other. They've abandoned those characters at this point. They're not anything I recognize, in contrast to Riker and Worf, who feel like those two characters still to me.
The other thing, too, is like, I think it suffers from just being overwritten. Like, I kind of feel like that scene in TNG would have been five lines across both of them.
Right.
You know, where it's like they come into the ready room or something, and it's Crusher
says... There's a lot unsaid to get the point across.
Yeah.
You know,
Picard says, "Why didn't you ever tell me?" Beverly says, "Because of these other things, I made this
decision.
You
weren't around for me to tell you."
Yeah.
You know,
I lost a lot of people to space. I didn't want the same thing to happen, and so I made the decision. Go back to Picard. You took the decision away from me. Like, that's, you distill it down to the most impactful elements of it, and just let it sit and let it marinate instead of just like going back and forth doing a monologue.
Yeah, you know, me thinking about the last time they fucked 20 years ago.
That was weird.
She's like, "You remember that night on the beach? I got pregnant that night." It's like, oh boy.
Yeah, that was
CGI smooth his face.
Yeah. His face. You know, I gotta say, I thought the CGI smoothing looked pretty good.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I thought it looked like Mass Effect, the video game.
Oh, really? I thought the
Riker looked better, I thought.
Yeah. I thought the low light of the bar helped it out quite a bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's unnecessary, actually. Like, I know they do it now just because they can do it, but his voice doesn't sound any younger.
Yeah, that's the thing.
He still has it is vocal fry, right? He has vocal fry is when you like your like voice kind of flutters because you can't get the breath out forcefully enough say the thing.
It trails off and kind of cracks at the end.
Yeah, yeah, that's what Stewart does with every line at this point.
Yeah, it's still. I mean, we're into the Irishman territory here, where you know, he still moves like... Luckily, he was just sitting down.
Yes, but, he didn't have to beat the shit out of somebody in the street.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, that's it. I'm entirely, you know, for a show called Star Trek Picard, I'm entirely unconvinced by Picard's motivations in this season. I don't believe anything that he does.
I just
really.
Also... Like, sorry, go ahead.
It's what you're saying. It's like, I can see how you get to this point, but like, you have to have a little patience to get him to these points, I think. And they're not willing to give him time to move there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he moves too slow, but there's no building or conversations that Picard has with any other characters to give you an insight into what he's thinking about with Riker. You know,
mm-hmm.
he's only talking to Riker in this episode. So you don't have a chance to bounce off of like, oh, I've learned this little thing about him, and now I'm going to take that nugget of information into his next dialogue with Riker. It just seems like it comes out of nowhere, and he's being basically irrational, really. Like, bloodthirsty or irrational and not thinking clearly about the situation, and it's a little bit frustrating just because the show that could actually, you know, it could say something about that if it was a little bit more clear.
Yeah, and I also think that this isn't they're, if I had to guess, they're probably going to do this next episode at length. But like, I feel like this is where you need to also just tell us a bit more about what's going on. Because I feel like the way that that Crusher scene should go is you shorten down the relationship stuff, really get to the core of that, leave the tension in the air, and then have Picard just change gears and be like, so Beverly, what the fuck is going on? Like, you know what I mean? Like, this, why are they chasing him? You're talking about the Romulans and the Starfleet and the Klingons coming after them. Why are they doing this? I'm assuming you can probably extrapolate by the end of this that those people who are coming after him were changelings, I guess. But
I didn't think that.
But even still, I don't know why. Like, what? There's no. They're not giving information, but they are also not treating it as like a mystery at this point. It's just an unresolved plot element.
Yes, it's a, you know, that's what the show does. Yeah. It's a question that no one wants to ask. What exactly is
it's
happening?
Just, but in this case, it's just the central motivator for everything that's happening, and like no one has asked the question.
That's true. So just to clarify that, so that makes sense that the changelings have been hunting Jack. We don't know why they want Jack at this point. Mm-hmm. It seems to be that. It ties into the Raffi and Worf thing, which is that they attacked the Daystrom Institute or whatever to steal the portal technology, but they stole something more important while they were doing that at the same time, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
That's basically where we stand with everything.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the portal gun real quickly. It's almost a perfect example of what I was talking about before. It's a weapon that I have no idea what I'm supposed to think about it for a while. Like the episode, you know, they do this thing where they're like, oh my God, they're building their forward weapon. And they're like, what the fuck? And then it fires and it's a portal.
Right.
And the ship goes into it and it just comes out where it was. And they try to do it again and they shoot another portal. They go into it and they come back where it is. And I'm sitting there going, am I supposed to be threatened by this thing? Like, is this thing? They eventually save it by they do the neat trick of like they open a portal and the torpedoes go into it and it hits the ship from behind, which was like, okay, that makes sense. But it's one of these things that's just like, it's more like an annoying trick than it is a weapon, really. And it's a portal ripoff. And also, just in terms of technically how this is supposed to work, it seems like it would be extremely difficult to fire that weapon in front of a ship that was going to warp at any time and hit it effectively.
You really, like, how far? Because it doesn't just immediately make the portal. It takes like a second to juice up when it shoots.
Yeah, the ship has to slowly fly towards it, and they fire it, and then it opens. But it's like, if Riker had just said, hit it, go to warp immediately, and the ship just takes off, there's no way that weapon works against you, right?
Or the thing I was thinking was, you do it once, and you see where you end up, and then your response is, okay, we're going to try this again. Set our course for 90 degrees to the left.
And
when she opens up the portal, just punch it. And so you go into the thing, and then it opens up, and then you just shoot off in the other direction at warp speed.
Yeah. Well, she's got this is the weapon, I guess, which is, you know, it's one thing you can not get away from it, I suppose, but it didn't sit as well with me.
It was the other thing that's about it was kind of cool, like when they did the torpedoes thing.
Yeah, that was cool. The best part. Yeah. That's if they had only done that with it instead of having the ship go into it repeatedly and end up back where they were, I would have been more impressed. Or like you can just never hit the ship with weapons because it opens a portal in front of it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of a thing. But that ties into the changelings. You like the changelings. I don't mind them. I'm like Al Swearengen. I had visions of vipers in my head when I was watching it, which is that I imagined Star Trek Picard as a man who's drowning. And they always tell you that when you're drowning, or one of the things you shouldn't do is you can't try to rescue a person who's drowning because they will pull you under. With you, And I was like, oh, they're pulling DS9 down with them as they're going down with this.
Well,
they're
I heard that if you told me you were drowning, I could not lend a hand.
Dun, 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 dun,
and I'd
dun,
seen
dun,
your dun. Face before, my friend.
I was in the concert. You saw me at that concert you were doing.
Yeah.
The changelings are fine. Yeah. My last thing about them is, like, I'm not opposed to seeing the changelings. I was kind of wondering why that changeling allowed himself to be tied up and put in the chair in the first place.
Well, he was tweaking out because he hadn't bucketed himself in a while. So,
but it's just funny in a modern show, right, where there's decapitations and brutal murders, that the changelings don't go T-1000 on people.
Oh, sure.
In this show.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, why would that changeling, even if he's having trouble, because he's having trouble staying in his solid form, so he needs to get the fuck out of there.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he just have a knife come out of his chest and stab Worf in the head, right, and then get out of there?
Great question. Yeah, I was kind of weirdly happy, even though I was also kind of went, huh, to see that apparently the changeling special effects have not improved.
They're worse.
In 20 years.
I think they're worse.
It did not look good.
Yeah, they spent it all on the CGI aging effect, yeah. I think. But I'm not on... And the last thing, and then I'll let you speak, is, like, this is all kind of gripey plot stuff, but I don't know. In the same way that I've thought that Worf's ending was kind of perfect, this justification or this explanation that in a species that prides itself on being a great link, where they are all sort of united with each other,
yeah,
a rogue faction didn't strike me as something that makes a lot of sense for the changelings.
No, not really.
So that is what it is.
Yeah. I will say about the Raffi and Worf stuff, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just that Michelle Hurd's, is that her name, Michelle Hurd?
Yeah, yes, yeah.
I don't know if her dialogue is just bad or if she just doesn't have a handle on it or something, but every line that she says just doesn't land. And so when they started off where she wakes up and she's like, "You're Worf. Does that mean the Jedi were real?" And he's like, "It's true. It's all true." I was like, okay, what are we doing? And that, but once Worf started talking about where he was, where his head was at.
Yeah.
And I saw that what they were doing is pairing them together. So Worf could teach Raffi to center herself take her to warring halves and
it's kind of like transcendence. He's basically moved beyond what his prior faults were at this point.
I like that. I was like, okay, finally they found something to do with Raffi that kind of makes sense. It's still...
I like it for Worf, too.
Yeah.
It's kind of a... I think it's a believable 20 years later change for Worf as a character.
Yeah. It's unfortunately still hooked on to whatever this... At least they introduced the changelings to be like, okay, well, all right, now we kind of know what we're dealing with, but this has still got the stank of New Trek Picard guys on a mission looking for something abstract for five episodes it hasn't quite gotten rid of that, but at least it feels like you've paired these two characters together. It makes sense, and theoretically, them working together will cause a change in one of them eventually, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that stuff was good. I loved Worf choke slamming the guy through a table.
Yes. Although the choke slam was awesome. Leading up to it was the sequence that I was dumbfounded by, which is that I don't know if it's because Michael Dorn is too old to run around and they're like, he can't be running in the scene, but they're hunting that guy in the drug alleys. And Worf is on the street with Raffi. He's like 50 feet away from her.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, "There's the guy." And she starts chasing after him and she's running through crowds and stuff. And he's in her ear going, "He went down the other alley. He's over there now.
Yeah.
He went the other way." He has no omnipotence over the scene. He does not know anything, but he's not chasing him with her. So it was like, how does he know where he's going, and why isn't he just chasing the guy with her in the sequence? The only thing I could think of is that Dorn just can't run or something in that outfit and makeup.
Yeah.
So they had to have him just hang back and say it through her earpiece.
Yeah. It also is kind of, Raffi does kind of make a good point when she's like, when he's like, you really should be more incognito. And she's like, bitch, you're just standing out in the open. Looking like
casual wear.
Looking like Worf from Starfleet. Wearing your Klingon fighting robes or whatever the hell you're wearing. You're standing out a bit too. But yeah, that whole sequence was kind of weird. I understood what they were doing where, you know, she's chasing him erratically and then Worf takes the time to think to anticipate where he's going to go instead of chasing where he went.
Why does the changeling not turn into another person?
Yeah, great question. Because at that point we can't know that he's a changeling. So
yes, obvious. That's my I don't know. The more I'm thinking about it now, it was kind of cool to see the changelings, but now I'm just I'm uncertain about it. Yeah, just for like, little things like that.
So this whole episode feels like stuff I really liked in theory served to me on a bed of stuff that like does not make any sense.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like the changeling thing. Okay, cool. The changelings are back. Yeah, sure. They want to get revenge for the Dominion War. They sabotaged. There's one of them on the Titan. He sabotaged it. Great. Okay. He's blowing up the thing. The ship's dead in the water. Okay, great. Rogue faction? And if
Odo tried to talk them out of it, but he just couldn't get it done.
And if if they find out, I can't remember what the thing was, but there was some line like, if we do this, then we risk igniting the Dominion War again. It's like,
that was a bad line too.
I don't know about this shit, guys. And it's like, you know, Riker arguing with Picard about how to handle the situation. Great stuff. But when you get into why that's happening, I don't really know about this, guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, it's a succinct summary. I feel the same way. It was I would probably say that I enjoyed this episode the most out of the three
we've
seen so far.
Definitely, yeah.
But it is a it's a series that it's definitely improved from where it was. And I don't find it unbearable to watch, really, which is, you know, damned with faint praise, but I'm not grimacing the whole time. But it is for every step, I wouldn't say that they take two steps, but it's more like the series has made two steps forward and it always takes a step back as it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's like they are making progress, but I do feel that it's hindered by stuff that they've either had to fill in because it happened in the earlier Picard seasons, or it's a holdover from this is how we tell these Star Trek stories at this point, or it's a bringing back a TNG or 90s Trek reference and not quite getting it right, and so if like Worf is the counterexample of that. Like I really like Worf, I really like Dorn, and someone on the Discord was saying that Dorn fought for his dialogue a lot, which I was wondering because I was like, man, it's weird that these writers can't write anybody else, but Worf's dialogue sounds perfect to me. I don't know if Worf is just a very easy character to write for or if Dorn actually brought something to it, but I did notice that.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, if he did do that and that's why his dialogue sounds more accurate, then good on him.
Yeah.
You know, someone's got to do it. Clearly, they're not going to do it for you.
I mean, they made the nice references. You're saying that they brought back the best aspect of the changelings, which is their sort of sabotage tactics, you know,
and that
was nice and things, but
you know, I do have
Vadic and her crew changelings. Sorry,
oh, I have no idea.
They're not.
Yeah, I don't think so. It seems like they're like I was again. No idea. We spent 35 seconds on their ship, and all she was saying was shoot them again. Like that's literally it. I was gonna say these things. I know it's a cheap dopamine hit, but there's just certain things that just when I'm watching this show and I'm thinking like, okay, yeah, this kind of works. I don't really like this. Then they cut to an exterior shot of that ship and I'm like, oh yeah, here we are.
The Titan.
Here we go. Yeah.
Yeah. Looks good.
You know, I think that's the danger and also the fun of something like this.
Yeah.
Where you can have that nostalgic dopamine hit, it helps everything get digested better. But you know, it's like if you keep hitting the morphine drip, eventually it's going to kill you. You know,
Well, kind of a related story thing is that this episode made me question why Shaw is in the show at all. Because once Riker took control of the Titan, felt right.
That's what I said last week. Why didn't they just have Riker be the captain of the Titan?
Well, I was thinking before, you know, I was like, maybe they'll do something with Shaw. Yeah. Maybe they will. But to this point, there's been no reason to have Shaw in this show.
Yeah, he was just an obstacle at this point. I mean, I can't imagine he's done. I'm sure he's going to have more to do.
He had the worst line, I think, though, or at least the most infuriating to me, which is that it was a very modern Trek line where that Vulcan science officer is like, this nebula is some kind of biological and electrical impulses, and he goes, anyone else got some weird shit they want to tell me? It's like, you're a fucking Star Trek captain, dude. Yeah. How much weird shit have you run into in your life? This is not the weirdest thing.
I just don't understand that stuff. Because,
he's a professional. He's the captain of this ship.
I understand. Listen, we all love Buffy the Vampire Slayer, okay? We all love Veronica Mars. Everybody who writes TV now grew up watching that shit. But you have to understand that people who talk like that, if everybody talks like that, it feels weird. Yeah. Unless it's especially in a show, in a franchise that has been around for 60 years where people don't talk like this.
Right.
You know, exactly. And I hate to harp on it this much, but like if you took one character or maybe a couple and had them have more modern phrases, that's fine. But like if you've got the captain of the ship talking with the same quippy nature as Geordi LaForge's daughter, who's like 25.
I would say you can even separate it by there are Starfleet characters and non-Starfleet characters, and that's the difference between how they can talk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That too. It on Star Trek, it always, especially with the older characters, like the newer shows, Discovery. Yeah, sure, whatever. I don't give a shit how they talk. No, they're in the future now. Whatever.
Curse words. It's like the Deadwood thing when no one knows how people swore in the 29th century.
Like
Discovery's going to tell us.
You have no, with characters like that on Discovery, you have no frame of reference for how these characters would or wouldn't talk.
Right,
but when you start laying this kind of writing onto characters who people watching the show know what they sound like. You know how Picard sounds. You know how Riker sounds. You know how Worf sounds. You know how Seven sounds.
Interesting. You might not know it until you hear them not talking that way, which is how I sort of feel. Like I don't notice the Trekkie dialogue the way it should sound until I hear them not talking that way.
Right. Yeah. You know? I don't consider myself someone who is super well versed in that kind of stuff. But when they have the scene where Jack breaks Seven, or Jack and Seven leave the room and he punches that guy out, they do this cut where Seven basically goes like, I didn't see that one coming. And it's like, that's not what she sounds like. I don't even know that character yet. I haven't even met her in Voyager, and I could tell you that's not something she would say.
I didn't like the fact that she kicked the unconscious guy's leg out of the way. He's a Starfleet officer.
Yeah.
He doesn't do anything wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why did she kick him?
Yeah, I don't know. It's... Yeah, I'm not sure, and I hate. I don't want to just sound like an old fogey here, but there is just a certain.
I think we generally like the episode too,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
It was not a terrible episode of television.
Yeah, but it's when you have characters who you know what they sound like because there's 30 years and 200 something episodes to draw from.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to put it this way, but if you took an AI bot and had them read these lines using all of the dialogue from the original show, you'd go, yeah, this doesn't sound right. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It just doesn't track. It's except if you had Riker. If Riker eventually says something like, suck my dick, I would believe that. I'm hoping.
He's been building to that for 25 years.
I am hoping that this show ends with Riker telling someone to go fuck themselves.
I wouldn't be opposed. But it does, truthfully, it does feel within Riker's character to do it that. Does, kind yeah. of like it, that. That seems like his.
Even in the old show, I believe that everything off screen,
right?
Riker is just a trash mouth.
No, I completely agree. It just brings to the point, like what all the older Trek writers used to say, which is that it's hard to get writers who know how to write that kind of dialogue because it is extremely artificial the way that the old Trek shows talk to each other, the characters talk to each other.
It's very stylized. And it's
very stylized. And it's part of what we like about those shows. Yeah. It's what makes it so easy to go back into. And this modernization where the writers don't really seem to grasp that, like, or they don't seem to think that it's very important to, like, it's not fundamentally a stylistic choice that Trek needs to feel like Star Trek, I think has been a big mistake.
Well, I wonder if, again, I don't want to give these people too little credit because obviously they're professional writers and stuff and they're not idiots. But I think Star Trek dialogue is stylized in a way that you don't immediately realize how stylized it is.
Right.
And so I think you could probably come in to this job or situation thinking, man, the dialogue in Star Trek is just so flat. Like, it's so traditionally flat. We got to spice it up and make it more modern. And then what you're doing is you're importing a different style onto something that already has a very fairly definable style. And so it feels, it doesn't quite click the way that it should.
Yep. I noticed in little things, someone on the Discord had mentioned the fact that the computer in a previous episode said a 100% chance of something. And that would not have happened. I noticed it when it said it, and I was like, wow, that sounds weird. Why does that sound weird? And it would be that the old shows would just have the computer do like a data thing where it's like 90, with certainty of 99.99999%. You know? Yeah. Like there's a aspect of you can't 100% predict something. And also, the computer was wrong because they got away from the ship.
Right. So that would be a whole episode. That would be a whole episode of Star Trek.
If the computer predicts something 100%. I agree.
Yeah, one other thing. This is a completely different thing. But it's one of the things that I feel like is emblematic of this show and of modern Star Trek, where something about it feels wrong. I don't know for a fact that it's wrong, but it feels wrong. Is that torpedo thing they did where they shoot a photon torpedo and then blast it with the phasers and then the concussion of the explosion
knocks
is enough
the ship away.
To like, it was like a video game. Like you hit the glowing red button and it just knocked it off screen.
It was a Smash Brothers victory. It just got KO'd off the little island.
Like, why don't they do that all the time?
Or why doesn't the torpedo hitting the ship do that
all the time? Why is that better than the torpedo just hitting the ship?
I don't. Yeah, that was a...
It just seemed like such a strange thing where it's like, okay, this doesn't feel totally well-conceived, but it's in space and you're using photon torpedoes and it's Riker and Picard, so I guess it's a Star Trek thing, but...
It doesn't seem like novel or thought out enough, really. It's like it's kind of surprising that that's the tactic that the writers will come up with, which is like, you know, you could probably, I would assume you could spend a little bit longer and think of something more clever to do with the photon torpedo than that. But no, they just, you shoot it and then you hit it with the phaser and that's effectively the greatest weapon that's ever happened.
You hit that thing with an inverse tachyon pulse, baby.
That's reverse the polarity.
Yeah.
And it'll explode all
over. Also, I hate to be this guy because I like space stuff. I like seeing explosions in space, but would that even happen? Is it, no. Do concussive waves travel in a vacuum?
No, it can't, right? Because there's no air pressing against you.
Yeah, so. Like I'm willing to believe that if something like a black hole explodes or folds in on itself, or if like a planet explodes,
gravity
exists. The Death Star explodes. Sure, you get caught in that, you start tumbling, and your ship starts going haywire or whatever. But if you explode a photon torpedo in front of a giant ship like that, I don't know. It seems like asking a lot from that show, Dr. Peter.
Maybe they'll reveal that the Shrike did something. They knew that was going to happen, right? That's the hope here. That's what we'll see. All right, I guess we're done with 17 seconds. So it was fine, I think. It was the best episode of the season for me.
Mm-hmm.
As you were saying, I think you said it well. It's just like for every great thing or interesting thing, they will serve it with a side that is like, oh, I don't want this on the side here. This is no good. Get this out of here.
It feels kind of like, I hate saying this. I hate it when people use this. It feels kind of like Star Trek fan fiction a bit, where it's like.
It does, yeah. Yeah.
And what I mean by that...
Well, that's the legend stuff, right? Like, any fan fiction has got to have, like, dialogue where they're like, you're the famous Jean-Luc Picard.
You know, I give that stuff a pass just because it's... The Enterprise has such a history that I believe that these characters would be larger-than-life characters to people who work in Starfleet and all this kind of stuff. I give that stuff a pass. Also because... Why are you bringing them back if they're not a big deal, I guess? But
no, but that's what I mean. Like, it's one thing for the viewers to think, I love seeing all these legends on screen. It's another for characters in the universe to start talking about. Like,
true, yeah.
As TNG was at its most successful, it did not have characters, guest stars appearing on the show going, you guys are the world famous Enterprise and its fantastic crew.
Really? Did they not do that when Scotty shows up?
No, I mean, they recognize Scotty for being famous as something, but like the most you get is my memory of someone will like Picard will say, Picard, you're one of the greatest, you're one of the best captains in the fleet and stuff mm-hmm. like that, which is fine. You can say that.
I do think, I will say, I'll meet you in the middle at least and say that yep. I think there is a weird over fanning of this stuff in modern movies or in modern shows. Like fan culture has somehow bled into these things where you can have your characters acknowledge that these guys are big deals, but it feels like you are running into these guys in line at Comic-Con. And that's where the disconnect happens, where I don't know. It just doesn't feel natural. It feels like fan projecting, but
I think a good example of that is Geordi, I think.
Sure,
right? Like
maybe it's written into all their contracts. Everybody has to be referred to as the greatest to ever do it, or they're not going to be on the show.
It's just, it seems that people have such in the universe have such an uncritical eye that anyone associated with the Enterprise was the greatest person who ever did anything.
That's
at
fair.
That point, you know, and like, you know. I wouldn't even, if I was making a douchey like tier video of Star Trek characters, I don't even know if Geordi's my number one engineer. You know? Right. So it's like there's a little bit of an argument to be made, I think, for everyone worshiping at their altar, I suppose. But it's a very minor thing, but it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. But to get back to what I was saying about the fan fiction thing, it feels it's fine. It feels like fan fiction in that it feels like Star Trek stuff that is recognizable, but it doesn't have the comprehensiveness of being written by someone who truly understands the show because they work on it every week. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's obviously, I think, I don't know where to put the blame on that.
Well, I mean, I was actually thinking about this because I thought it was interesting. Like, I'm not saying this is, don't take this the wrong way. I'm not saying that like I should be a writer on Star Trek, right? But me and you, I was wondering just by the sheer volume of Star Trek we've watched, right? Mm-hmm. And we're not even people who've rewatched these series multiple times, right?
Right.
But I wonder on the writing staff, like it's probably extremely unlikely that the writers have done what we've done, right?
Mm.
That seems extremely unlikely that they've seen all the episodes of Star Trek. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I'm not saying it's a prerequisite to do it. But what was interesting about the 90s Trek was that they were literally people who grew up on the original series and then created the universe of the 90s Star Trek themselves.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So they kind of knew everything that there was to know. And I don't think writers have to, obviously it's not some like gatekeeping thing of like, they need to watch all the Star Trek episodes. But I think that if you don't watch it on such a degree, you're probably more likely to do this thing that you're talking about, which is to make the reference, but it's not quite right.
Yeah.
The way that you're making it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like the rogue group of changeling thing. I feel like is a perfect example where it's, yeah, Dominion War, awesome, love that stuff. What if we brought back the changelings and we did like this rogue group? Awesome, yeah, sure. And there's like no one in there who's going, that's not really how these guys work.
Yeah, you know, they're all one. Like, does no one just saying like they're all one mind? That's their whole point. Is that like all they want is to get back to this one mind thing?
But the idea of bringing back the changelings and you have a rogue group of it feels like a very fan fictiony kind of idea where on the surface, yeah, awesome, cool, but it doesn't quite have the foundation of how this stuff works. I don't know if I'm really getting my point across, but hopefully
you are. I think our points are combining.
It's hard to kind of verbalize what I'm trying to get at. I'm not trying to shit on anybody who writes on the show because this shit is very hard. But it is a strange tone.
I think it's also we're in a weird spot too, where I see no virtue in knowing a lot about this universe. You know what I mean? Like the fact that I've seen so much of this fucking franchise does not mean that it doesn't mean that my opinions are better than the writer, but I think that it's almost like having watched too much of it makes me at a disadvantage for absorbing any new content from it.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I just feel that the older shows didn't really run into that problem as much. And I think that the obvious solution here, but it's not what people want to see, is that you do not reference older stuff. You make a totally new show,
you know? Yeah.
And that avoids the problem, but the franchise can't do that at this point. So,
yeah.
All right, I guess we're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening to 17 Seconds. We went on for, I can't do the math. It's a lot of seconds, but we're done talking about it. Next episode is called, do I have it here? It's called No Win Scenario. So let's see, Clay, before we go, any random question I can ask you to predict?
We're going to get a flashback to a D.H. Picard taking the Kobayashi Maru.
You think so?
I don't know.
Just because of the title of the episode? Name.
Yeah. I can imagine someone being like, you know, we've never seen how Picard handled Kobayashi Maru. Which, now that I say it, I'm kind of interested, but I don't want to see it in the show.
I hope, my one hope for the future is that I want Worf to reunite with the old TNG characters sooner rather than later. Yeah. I think that he's salvaging the Raffi storyline, but I would prefer he move back with everybody else, but I don't know how quickly that's going to happen. Also, they are definitely trickling out those TNG characters. Deanna Troi appears here as horrible bitch wife number one.
Didn't we kind of make a joke about that, about the last episode, that Deanna was just going to show up like walking by in the background?
Yes. just tell Riker to fuck off. Yeah, she hasn't combed her hair in 3 days, which felt like a very 1980s Star Trek line. I think it just didn't age particularly well, but I don't know if she's ever going to show up or if she's just going to be in hologram form.
Is there anybody left after? Is there a big one I'm forgetting? Geordi. No, I mean after Geordi. Is there anybody after Geordi?
No.
Because I would have to imagine
Lore and Moriarty eventually, but that's it.
Yeah. I have to imagine Geordi showing up in the next episode.
Yeah. Is he gonna show up with some? I think someone said he's going to work at the Daystrom Institute.
Yeah.
And Worf is going to run into him.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm down with that. I'm down with those two. So, final question, then we'll go. I know we've kept you. How is Burton's Geordi going to play? Is he going to feel like Geordi LaForge, or you think he's going to be some weird version of Geordi?
I think it could go two ways. I think it either plays well and it's memorable, the Geordi as you remember it, or they're going to force some sort of bullshit conflict between him and Worf that is unresolved. You know what I mean? Like, it feels
Do you remember our last time 20 years ago on that beach?
No, Worf? But kind of. You know what I mean? It feels like that is not off the table on this show because people just can't be happy to see each other.
Worf is going to open the next episode by saying, "Oh, I can't believe it's been 20 years since I've seen Geordi."
Yeah. Boy. Like I hope it's Raffi and Worf walking into the Daystrom Institute and Geordi just like lights up and runs and gives him a big hug. Because I don't need strife between Worf and Geordi just because they're in a scene together and they need to have conflict.
Yeah. I'm mostly concerned because I don't dislike LeVar Burton, but he does strike me like he was a famous victim of that famous humble brag Twitter account that would like retweet humble brags from people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like Burton had taken a picture and it was for people who don't know, humble brags is like this sort of idea that people came up with on Twitter, which is that people will brag about themselves, but do it in a self-deprecating way, to sort of knock it down to make it seem like you're not really bragging about mm-hmm. yourself. Mm-hmm. And his was like, nothing better than curling up with like the ones you love like by a fire. And he took a picture of the fireplace in his house or something. But just on the mantle were all his like Reading Rainbow Emmys lined up. Like one after another. You know, it's just this kind of like, oh, I see what you did there. I see how you took that picture. But I think that Burton kind of has that personality, I think, which is I wouldn't call him a blowhard, but I think that he's definitely in his beliefs. And I wonder how much he's going to actually carry that into Geordi. I could see Geordi being a lecturing character in a way that is not what TNG Geordi was, mm-hmm. just because it's copying Burton's personality at this point. So,
yeah, I hope not. Somebody needs to just be in a good mood in this show.
You would think so. Although he had some line in the trailer that is like semi trying to be profound. So we'll see. That's it. 17 seconds. No win scenario is next. Thanks everybody for listening. Patreon.com/thePenskyfile. Everything is there. You guys are here if you're listening to it. Clay, anything you want to say or are we done?
I think we're done.
We are done. Thanks, everybody. We will see you next time.